Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Supernatural George. I'm Mittens, and today we are going to be discussing Season 4, Episode 9, I Know What You Did Last Summer, wherein we learn not to become distracted by the sleight of hand to the point that we're completely blindsided by the prestige. And yes, I'm talking about the prestige because I reread something that I wrote back during like a 5-year-old rewatch where there's a trick to this episode and you're still not seeing the whole trick. And that's basically most of season 4, right? This episode was written by Sarah Gamble and directed by Charles Beeson. And it is our intro to Anna, who we still don't know is actually a fallen angel, even by the end of this episode. We don't find that out until next week's episode, which the two work sort of like a two-parter. They're really like one big episode. So I kind of sometimes forget what we find out in this episode versus the next one and the sequence of activities, because I just think of them as one giant episode. But she's actually a fallen angel who chose to rip out her own grace and live a fully human life. But we're going to leave that part of her story for next week's episode. And today we are going to focus on this human woman who can hear angel radio and has made herself and her loved ones a target for demons and angels because of that. This episode also gives Sam a chance to defend his choices to work with Ruby since Dean's death, which, contrary to Sam's hopes, doesn't really do much to help Dean get over his suspicions of her bigger agenda. There's still stuff Sam isn't being honest about, like what he's doing to enhance his demonic powers. But some of the stuff Dean had been trying to keep to himself about his time in hell becomes impossible for him to just repress anymore. Like after last week's episode ended with him telling Sam, "I won't lie about it. You can know that I can remember all of this, but I am not talking about it." Well, when Alistair shows up to torment him a little more, there's not much he can do to avoid explaining how this demon knows him and what this demon is talking about. Just like Uriel prodded Sam to uncover the truth about Dean's time in hell, it's like all the baddies are using Sam to pry this out of Dean and lay more suspicion on Dean as far as Sam is concerned, because they need to nudge Sam into the right direction that they want him to go into. So all of this stuff is working in the background, and you don't really think of it as the sleight of hand, but it is the sleight of hand in this episode. There's so much going on in this episode, it's probably easier to discuss all the bigger picture plans that still look like so many unrelated moving pieces on the chessboard of season 4. But with the power of hindsight, we can really begin to put those pieces together now. We have the whole episode to discuss it, so I'm not going to belabor the point in the intro. Shocker. But what this week's and next week's episodes do for me, the biggest revelation I personally took from them are the core of my understanding of angel grace, what angels are, and what grace is versus what a human soul is, since Anna was born as a human being with a human soul. I've written so many words on the subject, all filed under my tags, either on the nature of angel grace, or angels and souls, or you learned it from the goats, which is specifically my tag for Cass's journey toward discovering his own humanity and free will. So much of what canon anchors Cass's entire character arc around can only be fully understood by contrasting his journey against Anna's. I know that there's a part of the fandom that talks about, oh, well, they just gave Cass Anna's role. They took Anna's role and just gave it to Cass and kept him instead. And it's like, no, they introduced Anna so you could see what potential awaited Cass if he wanted it. This journey toward humanity that she chose for herself and then had to renounce because she had no other choice, right? Cass is just at the far beginning of this journey that Anna is at the very end of. She's had her time as a human, and we see the horror of what happens to her over the next few seasons. we don't want that for Cass. We want him to be okay because he's the character we care about. It's like we only had her become a character because they wanted Cass to face these questions of humanity, of free will, of freedom, of what that could really mean for him. With Anna, there's no character journey to that. She would just be an information dispenser to them rather than someone also on a character journey. They're not interchangeable characters. They're not interchangeable character arcs. They're entirely different. But without Anna's, we can't really understand that that's even a potential or a possibility for Cass. All of his interactions with her center around his own fear of free will and his own feelings, doorways to doubt, you know, that she'll tell him in a few more episodes. There is absolutely, I don't even understand how people could look at their character arcs and say, oh, well, they were going to expand Anna's role and kill Cass off. Well, yeah, but by the time they introduced Anna, it feels like she was only created so they wouldn't have to kill Cass off. So they could give him this more expanded role in a role that's much more interesting than him just being an angel or an information dispenser or an all-powerful character that can come in and solve their problems with a snap of his fingers, and that's it. They gave him meat to his character by telling us, hey, well, look what this other angel had already done. We're at the end of her story. She's figured it all out. We don't need a journey with her as a character. Cass has a character journey now because of what we learned through Anna. Okay. And that's all I'm going to say about that in this episode, because in every episode she's in, we are going to have more conversations about this. Bonus content for this episode includes another dubious quality promo video, which is fun still to see how they were promoting the show, and a non-spoilery interview with Julie McNiven about her first two, at that time, episodes, because they were back-to-back, but she talks about her character, and it's a nice little interview. We also have casting sides for Anna and for Alistair, for the folks who enjoy those. And on that note, I think it's time we just get right into the meat of this episode. Today's Then segment starts out by reminding us that Cass exploded some lights in a barn before even introducing himself. We get a reminder of the rising of the witnesses and Bobby telling them that it's a sign of the apocalypse written in the book of Revelation. And then a reminder from Cass that the seals that will eventually unlock the apocalypse are being broken by Lilith. We get a reminder of just how awful Lilith is from season 3. And then Cass's warning that when all of those seals break, Lucifer walks free. We get a reminder of Sam's ability to exorcise demons with his mind and Dean's horror at this discovery. Not only does Dean accuse Sam of maybe not even being human anymore, but we get a reminder of some lamp violence when Dean punched it across the room before telling Sam that Cass told him that Dean has to stop him from doing this. Or the angel's will. The breaking of the seal that released Samhain and how Sam exorcised Samhain after the fact. Samhain, yes. We get Uriel's threat to Sam to stop using his powers. And then the reminder that Uriel was the one who prompted Sam to poke at Dean about what he remembers from hell. Then we get some of Dean's hell flashbacks. The red and white flashing lights and the screeching sounds and the video of his eyes that we've been seeing as hell flashbacks since the season opener. Because Dean is not going to be able to avoid that big question. And on that note, we come to now. We're in some sort of psychiatric facility with bars on the windows that we saw from an external shot. And inside we meet Anna, who is listening to something that nobody else can hear. She's being interviewed by what we have to assume is a psychiatrist, who's asking her questions about how she got there and if she remembers having to be restrained by 4 people, telling them that she had to warn everyone. And then the doctor prods her for more information. She's like, never mind, it was stupid. Like, she recognizes that people are going to think she's crazy if she says what she was hearing. The psychiatrist clearly thinks Anna is not engaging with reality and is writing down all of her comments, but everything Anna's saying is things that we know are true. The end is near. The apocalypse is coming. This demon named Lilith is trying to break the 66 seals. Like, yeah, that's supernatural canon. We know that's actually happening in her world. Anna pauses and listens, and we hear the angel whispery noise that we identify with angel radio now. The doctor redirects her attention back to their questioning and is like, so you said there are 66 seals, and Anna's like, no, there's like 600 possible seals, and Lilith only needs to break 66 of them. So now we know that it is really difficult for them to try and protect all 600 or so potential seals. There's not like a specific order, like we will learn that there is a first seal that must break, which was Dean, and then a final seal which must break, which is Sam. Everything else in between is whatever the demons can get their hands on to break. It doesn't have to be in a specific order. All of them are up for grabs in between. Anna is very distressed by this because she says that's why the angels are losing and that's why we're all going to die. So whatever she's hearing on angel radio, the vast majority of angels are very, very concerned that they are desperately losing this fight. Later that evening, an orderly comes to deliver Anna her meds, and he opens the door and she's drawing something in a notebook. It looks like a stained glass window. She turns around and sees his face and freaks out. She's like, what happened to your face? And then his eyes flash demon black. She can see the demon's true face, and she is terrified. In her fit of terror, the dresser in her room slides across the room and crushes this demon against the door. She can hardly believe that she actually did this, but clearly she did this with her own mind. Anna has more powers than just being able to hear angel radio and see demon faces. She's got almost angel powers here. And once she realizes what she's done, she flees in terror. And then we get the title card. And I'm going to pause here for a second to discuss why Anna, even after she was born human with no grace, her grace fell separately. How is she having these powers? Is it just because she was an angel before she was born completely human? Because when Cass lost his grace and when Metatron lost his grace, they didn't have these powers. So I'm just curious as to why she does. See, this is the sort of episode that makes me really think about what makes an angel, what makes a human, what Anna really is, having been born perfectly human, even though inside that, the core of her was an angel without grace, but she can still do these things in a pinch. She's got some level of psychic powers, even as a human, which bodes for interesting things for Cass, even when he does become human. Yet one more reason why I'm really not here for the argument of whether enjoying the concept of human Cass at the end of the series takes something away from the character and who he is as a person. Because it doesn't. All it takes away is the power pack that is grace, which is not an identity. It's just power. No different from taking off a magical ring that gives you your powers, like when Dean borrows Death's ring. To me, what makes Cass an angel is that level of not related to his actual identity of who he is and what he identifies as. So that's just how I talk about Cass. And I've said it before that to me, it is irrelevant to him as a character and to his identity. So just putting that there in case anyone wants to nope out of the podcast for that reason alone, that the superpowered version of Cass holds very little interest to me personally. In the very first scene after the title card, like the very first thing we see is Sam and Dean clearly pulling a pool hustle. Dean is trying to argue that this guy is taking advantage of his drunk brother who doesn't know what he's doing. He's too drunk. And Sam has already lost $200 to the guy. Sam is insisting that he's fine. And he doubles down and puts $500 down on the next round. this is a total of $700 that Sam is saying to play this guy. And Sam breaks the balls. That's clearly a hustle. He's like, three balls go in pockets. Sam is clearly going to clear the table with this guy. But Sam looks up before he can set up his second shot and sees Ruby sitting at the bar. And he just drops his stick on the table and is like, keep the money. $700. That's a lot of damn money, especially for Sam and Dean, who earn all their money hustling pool and running little scams and stuff. That was probably at least a month's worth of gas money for them. And Sam just walked away from it. And Dean is outraged. She's like, keep the money. And he looks over and sees where Sam's going. And he's like, God damn it, not her again. And he is already in a foul mood, having lost $700 to this when they were going to have won over $500 if the scam had worked and Sam had finished the game. But no, he's got to suck up that loss. Like, Sam doesn't care that it happened at all. That doesn't even bug him a little bit. He couldn't even finish that 5-minute game. He walked away from it to talk to Ruby. That was so much more important. It's like, boy, does this woman have spectacularly invasive and intrusive timing. It's almost like she wants Dean to continue to keep her at arm's length and to be suspicious of her, because she knows that Dean is in with these angels who pulled him out of hell. And there's so much of what she wants to do here that she wants to divide Sam and Dean. She wants to keep Sam from fully trusting Dean. And this works to her advantage. It's little details like this that she wins all the awards for greatest manipulator through most of canon. I mean, she's only really outdone by Chuck himself. And it's just, I can't say enough about how perfect she plays her role. Dean approaches her and is like, you have a lot of nerve showing up anywhere near me. After the last time they saw each other was when Dean caught Sam in his lie, exercising demons with his mind in the beginning of the 4th episode of the season, Metamorphosis. And as far as he knew, Sam had cut all ties with Ruby after that. But Ruby came in to share some whispers that she's been hearing. Ruby heard about Anna's escape from the mental ward. She has no idea who this girl is or why they want her, but the demons have been ordered to capture her alive, which means nothing good. It means they want to torture and question her, not just that they want her dead. Dean wants nothing to do with this lead that Ruby is so generously offering them. He would rather just sit in this bar and drink his beer than do nothing else than go herring off after a girl that may not even exist just because demons said so. He is so anti-demon right now, he would have punched her in the face if he thought he could get away with it and stormed out. But Sam believes her, because of course. Driving in the car through the rain, Sam is on the phone, finds out that, yes, Anna Milton really did disappear from a mental facility, and yes, there really is a missing persons report filed for her, and Dean is just grumpy about this whole situation. He's like, this is a 3-day drive, and Sam's like, well, we've driven further for less, and Dean just does not want any part of this. He is still driving, but he is not happy about it. So Dean's just like, yeah, I don't understand why you're BFF with this demon just because I was down in hell for a little while. Maybe you'd like to fill in some of those details. Sam's like, yeah, why don't we just trade stories? So tell me all about how hell was. Don't spare the details. And at this point, I want to punch Sam. If I was Dean, I would have stopped the car and just let him out. Like, I would have been in the rain. Because no, Sam. These stories are not comparable in the least. And the fact that you're so willing to trust Ruby, maybe Dean needs some details on that. What Dean did in hell? Well, only the bad guys are trying to pry that information out of him, which makes you, in this case, a bad guy. But he feels very righteous about this line of questioning to Dean, and equally defensive of his story of what he's done with Ruby and why he feels so trusting of her. But Sam gets thoughtful as we drive. We flash back to 6 months earlier. Sam is drunk, distressed, and clearly desperate as he buries a box at a crossroads, and we know he is summoning a crossroads demon. He is not in a good mood. This must have been right after Dean went to hell. And the demon appears way down the road and's like, I wasn't sure whether it was safe to show up since you shot the last demon you summoned this way. Sam begs this demon, practically yells at him to let him trade places with Dean. It's a fair trade, Sam said. And the demon's like, no, it's not. And it's not going to happen. Sam's like, well, Lilith wants me dead anyway. And Sam, no, Lilith doesn't want you dead at all. And this was the first time that Sam ever heard that they want Dean's soul in hell, that they want Sam topside. It has nothing to do with Sam's soul. They want Dean in hell. Everything is going exactly according to their plan. And Sam does not grasp this. He doesn't understand what this bigger picture is yet and what his role in it is. So while Dean was downstairs in hell being literally tortured, Sam was emo and sad that his brother was dead and in hell, and angry that his brother was dead and in hell, supposedly for him and because of him, when no, the demons apparently wanted Dean there. You come back to the shot of them driving in the car here on the way to Anna. Let's pause to note that when they finally do arrive at the hospital, Anna's in room 42, the answer to life, the universe, and everything. All that was in Anna's room. She's there to unlock everything for them. Unfortunately, it doesn't help because there's still more questions, but it puts them on the right path at least. They're interviewing the psychiatrist, and she tells them that Anna's attacked the orderly when he came in to deliver her meds. It knocked him unconscious, and he doesn't even remember coming into the room. Well, because he was possessed by a demon, and the demon obviously fled when he lost Anna. Apparently, Anna went from being a well-adjusted journalism major who had lots of friends to fully decompensating into schizophrenia within the span of weeks. She describes delusions that Anna was experiencing, that demons were everywhere. She hands Sam Anna's sketchbook, which he opens up to see pictures of a stained glass window, but then he starts flipping pages to the raising of the witnesses with the exact symbol that had appeared on the witnesses' hands in episode 2 of this season when the witnesses rose, the breaking of the seals. The doctor's like, yeah, she believed that monsters were real. And Dean's like, yeah, that's just crazy. But this is very unsettling because whatever this poor girl is experiencing is not psychosis. It's some sort of hotline into what is actually happening in the apocalypse that Sam and Dean are living through firsthand. The next one is the rising of Samhain, or Samhain. Dean makes a comment to Sam that it's the Book of Revelation, and the doctor's like, since when does Revelation have jack-o'-lanterns? Dean's like, it's a little-known translation. The doctor thinks they're a little bit nuts now, but they know. This is exactly what they know are the details of the apocalypse happening in their world. The doctor tells them that probably because Anna's father was a church deacon, that's why her delusions took on religious overtones, and then added that, I hope you find her because it's dangerous for her to be alone out there right now because of her psychiatric illness, not because, yes, these demons are like literally after her. But Sam and Dean are beginning to believe, even Dean, who was very skeptical that this was even going to be a real case. They go to Anna's parents' house. They get no answer to their knock, but both cars are in the driveway, so Dean just tries the doorknob, which is unlocked. They go in and find Anna's parents dead. Beside their bodies, Sam finds sulfur. Demons did this. They can't figure out where Anna would have run to, and Sam notices a photo of her church, which matches up with the rose window that Anna had been drawing in the hospital. That's where she would go to feel safe if she felt threatened by demons. So they go check out her church. Upstairs in the church, they find Anna hiding behind some stained glass. Sam calls out her name and is like, "We're not going to hurt you. My name's Sam, and this is my brother Dean." And Anna says from behind the stained glass, "Not Sam Winchester." And Sam's like, yeah. And then she comes walking out. Like, just knowing they were the Winchesters, she feels safe. She knows they're safe. She's like, "And you're Dean? The Dean?" And Dean's like, yeah, I guess, I'm the Dean. Anna goes on and kind of freaks them out a little bit by knowing their whole story. You were in hell and the angels pulled you out and you're going to stop all of this. The angels talk about you all the time. And then she looks at Sam and she's like, yeah, and some of them don't like you at all. Which, story of Sam's life. Anna describes her experience that, you know, she doesn't even think the angels know she exists, but she can just overhear them sometimes. And Dean puts this all together and comes up with, so they lock you up for being crazy, but really you're just tuning into angel radio. And that's our very first use in canon of the phrase angel radio, which I've been using since the very beginning of this as the default explanation for how angels communicate. And because, yes, that actually works as an explanation. But having this description that Dean has just given her is comforting to her. She's like, yes, thank you. Thank you for validating my whole experience. Because nobody has done that before her yet. You know, they've been medicating her like she was nuts. Sam asks when this all started for her, and she's like, September 18th, which is unsettling for Dean. That's the day he got out of hell. And Anna's like, first words I heard, clear as a bell, Dean Winchester is saved. And boy, that is unsettling. So, general consensus, that was Cass. That was Cass just yelling loud enough that even Anna heard it. It turned on her angel radio. Or her having that experience was just a symptom of the apocalypse proceeding apace. Now that Dean Winchester's back on Earth, the first seal has broken, and all the rest of the seals can now continue to fall. Anna's just a way like a prophet would be activated in a circumstance like this, or other cosmic tumblers unlock when one thing gets activated. It's almost like another window of the story onto itself. Like, she was created specifically to convey this point of view and validation to Sam and Dean and the story that they are being pushed to carry out. But Dean instantly understands why the demons want her, because if they get a hold of her, they'll be able to break into the enemy's code. You know, they'll know what the enemy is saying at all times. She's a radio receiver. Anna starts to ask if her parents are okay. She was afraid to go home. And that's when Ruby comes barging in. She's like, did you get the girl? We've got to go. And Anna freaks out. She's like, oh my God, her face. And Sam has to reassure her. No, it's okay. She's with us. She's working with us. And Dean is still like, yeah, don't be so sure. She's on our side, you know. Ruby prods, we have to hurry. But of course, it's already too late. Even with Dean's resistance to taking Ruby's advice, you know, she's known about this for days and days. She could have been there ready to pop in earlier, but, you know, it kind of feels like the whole thing is a trap because Ruby's plan isn't just to help Sam and Dean. It's to further this whole apocalypse thing. It's to keep that wedge driven between Sam and Dean, and this is doing it just fine. Dean's, like, trying to argue with Ruby that this is really super convenient. You know, you show up just when we get the girl. You probably led this demon here. And she's like, no, you did. He was waiting at the girl's parents' house. And while they're arguing, Sam points out a statue of the Virgin Mary, who is crying blood, which is never a good thing when your statues weep blood. And Sam takes Anna and hides her in another room. And Dean just stays there watching that statue, almost like he knows what's coming for him. Sam comes back out with a flask of holy water, and Ruby's like, no, there's no time. You've got to pull this demon right away. And Dean's like, hold on a second. No, Sam's not using his powers. Ruby just insists that this is no time to complain or get wishy-washy about Sam's powers. He either does it or we all die. Like, this is a demon that needs to be sent back to hell right now, or we have zero chance of survival. which kind of proves itself out because he's even immune to their knife. Dean watches horrified, doesn't try and stop this as Sam waits to do his little trick. And this demon knows how to make an entrance. He just smashes the door down without touching it and comes striding in like he owns the universe. When Sam holds his hand up and throws his power at this demon, his eyes roll white, and then he gives a little fake cough and is like, nah, you're not going to hurt me with that kind of power. This is a very strong demon with white eyes. So at Lilith's level of power here, the demon's like, you don't have the juice to take me on, Sam, and then makes a grasping motion with his hand and magically pulls Sam across the room. Sam has not been afraid of a demon using his powers on him in a very long time now. Ever since Lilith failed to hurt him with her light blast, he has been confident that he's immune to demonic powers. Except this guy can pull him across the room. Which, with the power of hindsight, having seen all of season 4, we know will lead to Sam feeling like he needs to make himself stronger. He needs to get back on his juice diet to enhance his powers more. And he's not going to tell Dean any of that today, because that's the part that he actually understands is shameful and bad and self-harming. And Dean would object to that most strenuously. So once Sam has gone through the door and rolling down the stairs, Dean charges the demon with his knife. And the demon's like, oh, hello there, Dean. This demon just starts pounding on Dean, just beating him to a pulp. Dean drops the knife, and the demon's like, you don't remember me. You don't recognize me. Ah, but I'm wearing a pediatrician. We were so close in hell. And Dean's like, Alistair. He recognizes this as the demon who tortured him in hell and taught him to torture in hell. And of course, Sam has overheard this. While Alistair was distracted beating Dean, Sam retrieved the knife and took a shot at Alistair. Missed his heart, though, got him in the shoulder, and it hurt him clearly, but not enough to kill him. And not enough to even really stop him, as he flings Sam across the room next. While that whole fight goes down, Ruby had snatched Anna out of the little closet where she'd been hiding and got her out of there safely. And Sam and Dean end up having to jump out of a second-story window to escape. But now Alistair has their demon knife, the only thing they have that can hurt a demon, because Sam couldn't nail Alistair in the heart. I'm wondering if he did get him in the heart, if it would have killed him. But because it was a shoulder wound, it just is annoying. Later that evening, Sam and Dean are in a motel, where Sam is sewing up a bloody wound on his arm, and Dean is spitting out blood in the sink and waiting to have Sam relocate his dislocated shoulder. They are not in good shape. This one demon really took it out of them, and they weren't even close to defeating him, and now they don't even have a weapon that can hurt him, let alone kill him. And not even Sam's magical demon powers do anything to this guy. Dean is grumpy with Sam over losing their magic knife, and Sam's like, yeah, saving your ass. Who was that demon? And that's when Dean has to kind of tap dance around the whole truth, because he's not going to dive directly into that whole story of who Alistair is to him. Meanwhile, Dean is worried about Anna, and Sam is confident that if she's with Ruby, she's safe. And Dean does not think that that is a correlation that actually factors out into reality, but Sam is confident about it. Just the way the two of them take care of each other in this scene, how casually Sam relocates Dean's shoulder. There doesn't have to be a discussion about how any of this is going to go. They both understand, and they just do what they need to do to take care of each other. Sam relocates Dean's shoulder exactly how he expects him to, and it's like, matter of fact, this is just a part of our lives to them. And this scene does a really good job of very simply showing us that, like, not as a plot point, not as something important that we need to discuss, except that I'm discussing it because the show does this very well, and I'm just pointing that out. How we now have like this little window into what their lives must be like after a lot of hunts, when they get injured and need to treat each other. It's just part of their lives that we got to see a little glimpse of in this episode. And I appreciate those sorts of details. Dean is again questioning Sam about his trust in Ruby, speculating that it's just as likely that Ruby brought that demon in to kill them once they found Radio Girl, so she could take Anna back to the demons. Because to him, it looks like Ruby's working with Alistair, you know, the demon that Dean hates the most of any demon ever. Dean's like, okay, well, if Ruby's actually trying to protect Anna, then why hasn't Ruby called us to let us know that she's safe? And Sam's like, because that demon is probably still watching us right now. The demon probably only let us go so that it could follow us right back to Anna. That's why Ruby is not telling them where Anna is. And Dean just thinks this is laughable. Dean is like, why do you trust her so much? And Sam is like, I told you. All Sam has told Dean about it is that she helped him hunt Lilith after Dean died. That's why he stuck with her and listened to her at all. And that's all Dean knows. And Dean's like, yeah, no, you got to do better than that. That's not enough for me to put my trust in her, especially after what she's done to you. I need to know more. I deserve to know more. And yes, he does, because this is literally affecting their ability to do their jobs, to survive in this world. This is an ongoing thing. Why would you put your trust in this demon? And why should I, when this girl's life is on the line, when our lives are on the line, why do you trust her? And Sam goes into about half the story with Dean here. But this is in no way similar to, well, just tell me all about hell and what you experienced there and your, you know, the suffering you endured being tortured in hell. Tell me all about that. Go deep into your emotional feelings about it too. We got to lay that all out on the table. That has nothing to do with their current circumstances other than Sam's opinion of Dean's emotional capabilities to continue doing his job to what Sam considers the expected level of performance. It's only when Sam thinks Dean's feelings are getting the better of him and making him ineffective as a hunter, because Sam is being led by the nose to believe this about Dean, that has also led Sam to keep these secrets from Dean in the first place. So, yeah, Sam, these are not on a par with one another. You really got to tell the truth. And of course, he begins right here. Sam starts his story with, she saved my life. And we flash back again to 6 months earlier, probably shortly after he failed to trade places with Dean via the crossroad demon that we saw in an earlier scene. He's in the same outfit. He's still staggering drunk. He arrives back at his motel room and is attacked from behind. A second demon comes out, and Sam almost immediately identifies her as Ruby. She takes her knife back from him and is like, you wouldn't believe the part of hell that I finally just got out of. And obviously, this is not long after Dean's death. She came back up topside very quick, apparently because Lilith was giving her one more chance. All she had to do was find Sam and kill him on Lilith's order, and she got to stay topside. And we all know Lilith doesn't want Sam dead at all, but this is the beginning of Ruby's manipulation of Sam to believe this story, to trust her, because Ruby takes that knife and instead of killing Sam, kills the demon standing behind Sam and holding him down for Ruby to kill him. Nope, she kills that demon instead of killing Sam. And it's like, okay, now we gotta go. And what a great setup for Sam to trust her. This demon that got sacrificed for her in with Sam. This is, you have to look at her role like a spy novel. Not like a demon or supernatural or horror novel. Her role is the star of a spy thriller. And it's perfect. She's completely undercover, even from all the other demons. Nobody suspects. All the other demons think she's a turncoat. And Sam thinks she's an ally, but really she's a double agent. So, you know, she gives them a little help, but not enough to actually win. But she's always working for Lilith because that's the big plan. Sam is less than grateful to have been saved. He's still down in the dumps about Dean and angry about everything. And Ruby's thrilled to be out of hell and puts forth the notion of, oh, would you like to hear about the corners of hell that I've seen? When Lilith gets angry, she gets creative and you have no idea what I've experienced. And all just needling at Sam, reminding him that, yeah, Dean is still down there. Dean is still going through it. Dean is probably Lilith's pet project right now. Is still experiencing that because of me. And Sam is so vulnerable to what Ruby is about to tell him here. Ruby paints the picture that she is a fugitive because of Sam, that she defied Lilith to get back to Sam to help him, and she deserves a thank you for that. But the only thing Sam wants is to save Dean, and if she can't do that, then she's useless to him. Ruby says nothing she knows of is powerful enough to save Dean from hell. Sam's like, I have no use for you. Get out. Before she can even answer, he's like, whose body are you even riding in right now? And she's like, I don't know. You never asked me that before. Some secretary. Why? And Sam's like, let her go or I'll send you right back to hell myself. And that's when she finds Jen Padalecki's vessel in a coma, unidentified, Jane Doe. Just as they're disconnecting her life support, there's no soul attached to this vessel. That's when Ruby wakes up in it. She tracks Sam down at a house he's squatting in and it's like, I can't bring Dean back, but I can help you get Lilith. Sam's like, oh, okay. And it's almost like this is what saved him, was having another mission that wasn't a fruitless hope of rescuing his brother from hell. Ruby had to wait just long enough for Sam to reach absolute rock bottom. I'd rather be dead and ready to die because of his guilt over Dean's death before she could approach him again and insert herself into his life and give him a new mission to focus on. Like, this is what saved his life, was this new mission to kill Lilith. And Sam's like, so you want me to use my psychic powers or whatever? And Ruby's like, yeah, I know it freaks you out, but, and Sam's like, no, I'm ready. What do I need to do? She doesn't even have to fight with him about it or break it to him gently. He's like, nope, let's do this now. Ruby's a little surprised, but she's like, okay, I can work with this. She sits down and explains to Sam that Lilith is cooking up something big, like apocalyptic big. From 6 months later, post Sam finding out that this, yes, is the apocalypse. It's kind of like, guess that's the big apocalyptic thing she's cooking up, the actual apocalypse. And Sam's like, okay, well then let's go in and kill her. What's stopping us? Let's go right now. Kill her. And Ruby's like, and half-ass it like we did last time? Like the time your brother got killed and ended up in hell for it? Yeah, let's not do that again. All she wants from Sam, in exchange for her teaching her Sam everything she knows, is patience and sobriety. So this is yet another way Ruby saved Sam from himself, from drinking himself to death. Back in the present, Dean asks what Ruby taught him, and Sam's like, well, the first thing I learned is that I'm a crappy student. And then we go back to a flashback where Sam is completely failing to exorcise his first demon, and he's just got a nosebleed, and he can't even irritate the guy. The guy's laughing at him, and Ruby kills him with the knife. But this begins to build Sam's trust in her. She will stop him from even being made fun of by this demon. Ruby approaches Sam, and she's like, it'll get better. It just takes time. And Sam thinks she's talking about his psychic powers as he swallows some aspirin with some whiskey. It's like, dude, you've already failed the sobriety thing she asked from you. But Ruby approaches him softly here. She's like, I'm not talking about your powers. And Sam understands. He's like, I don't want to talk about Dean. Don't you dare talk about that. And then Sam just can't hold back. He's like, where do you even get off telling me time heals all wounds or whatever? You're a demon, you know, like dismissing her. And she's like, because I used to be human and I remember what it feels like to lose someone. Ruby tries to tell Sam that, you know, you're not alone. And then she forcefully kisses him. And Sam pushes her off and is like, no, 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 that is not okay. And she's like, what's wrong? Ruby presses her advantage. She's like, what's wrong, Sam? Is it this body? Because you know it's only me in here. It's so nice inside this body. Soft and warm and already in the present as Sam's telling this story. You can feel Dean beginning to cringe at what Sam must be telling him about this if we're seeing it in flashback of what Sam is telling Dean. Ruby kneels down in front of Sam and puts his hands on her body, and Ruby finally just talks him around to it, and Sam just, you could see the moment he breaks and he just goes for it with her. And then we get far longer and more uncomfortable scenes between him and Ruby as they strip each other down. And when we cut back to Dean, he feels exactly like we do. We are in Team Dean right here. This is uncomfortably too much information, Sam. And Sam's like, hey, I said I was coming clean. And Dean's like, yeah, but now I feel dirty. And I mean, like, yeah, I do feel a little bit dirty too. Jeez, Sam, too much information. Dean still doesn't see it. He's like, so far, all I see is someone who screwed you, manipulated you, played mind games with you, and tried to talk you into going bad. And Sam's like, yeah, well, there's more. Yeah, there's always more, Sam. Shortly after, 5 months ago now, instead of the 6 to the when Dean was taken to hell, so like a month after Sam got back together with Ruby here, they got omens, signs that Lilith was in town. And he was like, we got to take her out now. And Ruby's like, you're not ready. You've got to be ready. You're the only one who can take her out. You can't go after her like this. You will fail. And then she gets it. Sam wants to die fighting Lilith. He doesn't want to survive it. He just wants to kamikaze her, take his best shot, even if it's not his best shot. Whether he lives or dies, or he doesn't even care. He just wants to charge right at her, say his piece to her face, even if she kills him. Ruby has to pull out the big guns. This isn't what Dean would have wanted. This isn't what Dean died for. Sam finds a little girl dressed up all fancy, sitting at a table covered with trays of sweets, and he thinks, ah, I found Lilith, because this is what she was doing the last time we encountered her. He sneaks into the house with the knife and is sneaking up behind her. And at the last second, she turns around and she's like got a tearful face like, please, I just want to go home. She's been kidnapped. She's a decoy. And there's 2 other demons who jump out and attack Sam. It wasn't even Lilith. It was just demon omens. In Sam's mind, he built it up into being Lilith because that's what they wanted him to think. And that's when Ruby comes in and picks the knife up that Sam had dropped in the attack and cuts one of the demons. She yells to Sam to take the little girl and run. Like, you save her, I'll fight these 2 demons off. She has a hard time fighting one of them, and he gets the better of her. She drops the knife, and he's about to kill her when Sam comes back in and exorcises the demon with his mind. The guy falls dead to the floor, so even Sam's insistence when Dean comes back eventually that most of the victims survive, well, this guy didn't. I mean, most of the ones we see get exorcised in any way, whether with a chanted spell or whatever, they fall to the ground dead, Sam. So you were getting the prize pickings of survivable possessions. I just always like to point out when there's a dead one, because most of them do die. But Ruby realizes right here in this scene that what Sam wants most is to be the hero. He was able to save that little girl. That's his motivation that keeps him from doing these stupid suicide missions. And I think that's kind of the lesson that she wanted to teach him with this whole setup, because if she wasn't in on this, because she's always been working with Lilith, it makes the season so much better to understand that she's always been working with Lilith. And all the other demons don't know that she's working with Lilith and has Lilith's blessing in everything she does. So she has to set these scenarios up herself or with Lilith's help to manipulate Sam into doing what she wants. Not to be suicidal, not to be crazy, but to train himself to eventually be able to kill Lilith when Ruby says it's okay. And even Sam telling Dean in the present about this event is like, she got through to me. She said to me what you would have said to me in that moment. And that makes Dean even more suspicious of her. To Sam, it's comforting. Like, yeah, she thinks just like Dean does. She understands just like Dean does. No, hon, she's manipulating you. Though the next bit sort of hits Dean in the face too. Sam says, if it wasn't for her, I wouldn't be here. And that's likely true. Sam either would have drunk himself to death. He would have just charged into any old hunt alone and tried to play the hero as best he could. And we've seen both of them go full self-destructive mode. We know exactly what that looks like. Sam would have died. I think it would have killed him. So in that very sick and twisted way, Dean has to accept that, begrudgingly, yeah, Ruby's intervention probably did save Sam's life when he wasn't there to do it. He doesn't have to trust her or like her or understand her motives because he thinks her motives are definitely something sneaky and suspicious, which they are, but at least he can grudgingly accept what Sam has told him here. I'm going to pause for one moment and point out the fact that the way they're seated in this motel, there's a light outside the window that we've seen before as the Blue Rose Motel sign, just a blue flower. And flowers, blue roses, lights, often get used as stand-ins for angels on the show, especially Cass. And there's blue light behind Dean, but also like a red warning in the lower part of the window. So Dean's trying to process all of this, but that reminder to us, the viewer, of the blue angelic light and angels watching over Dean and on his shoulder. Yep, that's still part of this, even though Sam now appears to have a demon on his shoulder. And then in a fit of incredible timing, someone knocks on the door, cutting off any chance for Dean to interrogate this situation any further. They announce their housekeeping. And Dean's like, yeah, no, thanks. We don't need it. And she's like, sir, I've got clean towels. And finally, Dean realizes she's not going to just leave them alone. And he goes to get the door. Like, I guess we could use some clean towels. Dean opens the door and he's like, why couldn't you just leave them at the door? And she just pushes her way right into the room, hands Dean a stack of towels, and goes right over to Sam. She shuts the drapes and hands Sam a note and says, I'm at this address. Sam's like, excuse me? And she's like, go now. Go through the bathroom window. Don't take your car. Don't pass go. Just go to this address. There are demons in the hall and in the parking lot. And Sam gets it. He's like, Ruby? Ruby is possessing this housekeeper. She's like, just for a hot minute. Sam's like, well, where's and Coma Girl? She's back at that address rotting on the floor. And she's like, just get there now. Go to that address now. So Sam and Dean show up, armed only with what they had on them because they couldn't even bring their car. They ask Anna if she's okay, and Anna seems very content to be there with Ruby. She's like, yeah, Ruby's not like other demons. She saved my life. And that gives Sam more confidence in his opinion of Ruby and confirms for Dean, not necessarily to Dean, but for him, that yes, other people can see this too. That prompts Dean to awkwardly attempt an apology. He's like, yeah, I guess I owe you for Sam. He doesn't want to say thank you. He doesn't want to say sorry, I was so hasty about judging you. And no, he's not going to say any of that because he doesn't feel any of that, but he is grateful for what she did for Sam. Sam's still alive because of her, and he wouldn't have been without her. So Dean can acknowledge that he owes her for that. But that's it. But unfortunately, not knowing what the true thing of the entire season is sort of makes Dean look like a real dick, not to even be able to say thanks. But when you know the truth of the whole season, he looks like the only smart one left in the room. After that awkward moment is over, Anna asks Sam if it would be okay for her to call her parents and let them know that she's okay, because they must be freaked. And another awkward moment ensues where they have to tell Anna that her parents are dead. She barely has time to process that her parents are dead and be very upset about it. She's like, why is any of this happening to me? And Sam is trying to comfort her, and she's not even able to process any of that before she gasps in like pain, like she's got a headache, and then the lights start flickering and she's like, they're coming. As far as Sam and Dean believe, it could be demons found them or something. Sam hustles her into the back room while the rest of them prepare to face down an army of demons come to attack them. Sam and Dean grab shotguns, and Ruby goes for the knife in the bag, and she's like, where is the knife? And Dean's like, yeah, don't look at me, because Sam's the one who left it in Alistair. It's not demons, though. It's angels. Cass comes walking through the door. Dean is the only one in the room who's really relaxed about this fact. He's like, please tell me you're here to help. We've been having demon issues all day. And Uriel takes one look at them and he is not impressed. This is the first time Ruby's come face to face with angels that we know of, though, and her eyes flash black, which we don't see that often from Ruby, and she looks scared. Cass tells them, we're here for Anna. Of course, Sam and Dean are highly suspicious of this. They're like, are you going to help her? And Cass just answers, no, and announces that she has to die. And that's where the episode ends, on to be continued. So there is a reason that my brain thinks of this one and the next one as one long episode. And we know why Anna has to die according to the angels, because he's following orders. He's being a good little soldier and doing what he's supposed to do. And it's very much like the role that Hannah has at the beginning of season 10 when she's dragging Cass around to round up rebellious angels who refuse to come back to heaven. Yeah, that's what Cass is doing here. In his mind, he's come here to punish an angel for abandoning her duty to heaven. And that's what it takes Cass the next 6 years to learn for himself about humanity. There's value here. There's beautiful things that he tries to teach to Hannah, but she declares those aren't for her. Those aren't for angels. Those are for humans. And she doesn't identify with humanity the way Cass will by that point. This is the very beginning of a very long journey for Cass. There's always the martial arts explanation of, at least I learned this through learning martial arts, you don't fully learn or understand what you've learned until you successfully teach someone else. That's like the final step in learning something and internalizing it. And every time you are able to teach and then supervise somebody else teaching, you level yourself up to the final phase of understanding of a thing. And that's what Cass goes through with Hannah and then again with Jack. And he never gets to fully internalize that for himself and get told back, yes, you've succeeded. So that's the grand tragedy of Cass's character arc. So yeah, if anyone deserves to come back, I mean, Dean deserves to not die on a freaking memo spike. So yeah, also, Cass needs that end bit of his arc where he's told, yes, you have succeeded. You got what you wanted. Hopefully that will come in the future. And if not, it comes in a million different formats of fanfic. So at least we have that. Season 4 really loves to show us something that we can't fully grasp the significance of until the very end of the season. And then sometimes, like in this episode, through the use of Sam's flashbacks, we get a peek at the trick of the whole season. Like with Ruby telling Sam in a flashback that she doesn't know of anything powerful enough to save Dean from hell, when we've already seen what exactly is powerful enough to do that. It's Cass. Or an angel is powerful enough to do that. Or Ruby's comments to Sam that Lilith was cooking up something apocalyptic big when that proved itself to be true by being the literal actual apocalypse. It just kind of reaffirms in Sam's mind that Ruby wasn't lying to him. But it also at the same time makes Dean more suspicious of what Ruby's true motives are. As it should, since we know how this season ends. But then in this episode, we get some information that doesn't really mean much to the bigger picture yet. Unless you already know the whole picture. Like the way Alistair and Cass both enter respective rooms in the same fashion. Blowing open a door without even touching it and then swaggering in. And obviously Sam and Dean don't know of a weapon yet that's powerful enough to work on an angel, but even their standard demon weapons, Sam's psychic powers and Ruby's magic knife, are both ineffective against Alistair, who we are supposed to understand is on a similar power level to Lilith because of their white demon eyes. I mean, first off, this is why I never thought Ruby's knife would have worked on Lilith. And we'll learn it doesn't work on princes of hell or knights of hell either. But also that Alistair and theoretically Lilith might have the power to at least hassle an angel, unlike most other demons. They're at least similar in power levels, for all intents and purposes, which will be important to next week's episode. But I just wanted to point out here, so folks can be aware of these parallels that the show is attempting to put in place between these high-powered demons and angels as we are beginning to understand them. It's just fun for me when the show uses flashbacks to give us a little nod to pay attention to something similar happening currently, which will only be exposed later on. And granted, even the things that Ruby says in this episode is like supposed to make us trust her more and does make Sam trust her more and makes Dean more suspicious of her. When you don't know how the season ends, it just looks like, wow, Ruby's really smart. She knows what's going on and she's sharing all this information with them. That's really bold of her to defy all these really powerful demons. Well, when you know the trick that she's their undercover mole sent to manipulate the Winchesters, especially Sam, it makes a lot more sense why she's got the good guesses and why she's so smart about all of this, because she's literally there to put that worm in their ear. Anyway, so you still can't see the full context of it yet, but you're getting hints that, yes, this is important. Pay attention here. And this is what I mean about season four being the tightest written. All through the whole season, all this stuff remains consistent. And I love that. But since this episode is to be continued, I'm going to save the meat of this discussion for the next episode. And I'm sorry for folks who have to wait to hear me talk about angels and demons and humans, oh my. But their big plans and poor Anna and what they go through with her grace and everything, to be continued. Next week in season 4, episode 10, Heaven and Hell. Until then, you can find me on Tumblr and Twitter at MittensMorgul or at SPNGeorge. You can find me on Discord at Mittens hashtag 4865. Or you can email me at MittensMorgul@gmail.com. And I look forward to talking to everyone again real soon. I'm getting ahead of myself with the recording again, so I'm glad I only have to wait like 2 or 3 days before I record the next episode, because I'm recording in advance of Gish, because the next episode will drop during Gish week, and it would just really suck to have to stop Gish for like 12 hours to make a podcast. Who wants to have to worry about that when you're just mentally exhausted from Gishing anyways? So yeah, I'm gonna create that, and then the week after Gish, I'll get a little bit of a break with Family Remains, because who even remembers that episode exists or likes it at all, really? So week after Gish, when I need a recovery, I'll have one. But for during Gish week, I'm getting ahead of myself. So picked a good week to have to do them back to back, because it feels like I want to jump right in and start the next episode anyway. Have a good one, everyone. And if you're doing Gish, happy Gishing.